This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Good morning, everybody, on this Saturday. Short show today because of Washington State Washington State basketball. So we'll get right to it. And, of course, we'll be on until 10:30. And then, of course, it'll be Washington State basketball. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Well, Washington State finally saves the Pac-12 with a victory. And Gardner Minshew was just sensational, 299 yards passing, 28-26 victory over Iowa State. And so now in the Alamo Bowl, they get the victory. So they got their 11th win, which is now a school record. So what a great season it is. We'll talk to Jesmyn McIntyre in the 10 o'clock hour to kind of recap what's going on there. Seahawks take on the Arizona Cardinals, what's probably going to be the last game for their head coach, a one-and-done season. Only like 13 of those one-and-done seasons now if that happens. But Steve Wilkes in trouble. We'll talk to Josh Weinfuss of ESPN.com in a second to see if that's really going to be the possibility. Nevertheless, it's going to be injuries, going to be a problem right now. Looks like it's going to be a 2 or 3 week injury on J.R. Sweezy, although he's going to try to play next week in the playoff game, likely against Dallas. DJ Fluker is going to be a game time decision. Game time decisions on at least at running back with Rashad Penny. Also, a couple other players are going to be Tedrick Thompson. All those. But again, the plan right now is to try to play and play through the entire game. Of course, we do have Black Monday coming up on Monday with several firings, probably as many as five or six. Six, I guess, probably going to be the likelihood. So it's going to be a painful Monday. Of course, they'll be on the show Monday at 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve and trying to keep you up to date on all those. Those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us is Josh Weinfuss from ESPN.com. And Josh, I mean, could you foresee how bad this season has been? I mean, it's just amazing how bad it is.
Nobody could have foreseen how bad this season turned out. I mean, this team is loaded with a lot of individual talent. So I think it's pretty head-scratching to a lot of people as to why the collective success of this team was not there.
So does it look like Steve Wilkes is going to be fired on Monday?
If you read the tea leaves, I think that's where it's headed. Is that the right move? I wouldn't say so, but I think it looks like there's a good chance that'll happen. I think there's still that small window where it may not happen, but I think there's a better chance it will happen than it won't happen.
So where did it go wrong? What happened?
I think where it went wrong, are things that he didn't have control over. I think a lot of it's roster issues. This team came into the season with a very thin offensive line, not much depth. You already had guys injured on the offensive line. Then you had a lot of – you didn't have a very strong wide receiving core. Larry Fitzgerald was the only the only guy you could really pin in and be in the season, someone who's going to have a productive year. You didn't know what rookie – Christian Kirk was going to turn into. You didn't know what J.J. Nelson was going to have this year. You didn't know about any of the other guys. And they all, I mean, no one really lived up to the expectations besides Larry Fitzgerald, as usual. Christian Kirk got hurt. He broke his foot. So you take those two main components of this team. That obviously is a lot of injuries. The Cardinals are, I mean, how rare is it for a team to lose all five offensive linemen in one season? Four of those injuries, they cut Andre Smith after he struggled mightily. So there's just so many factors that went into this year. But, you know, you Sam Bradford didn't play well in the beginning of the game. Then they're beating the season. Then you had to turn to Josh Rosen, who, it's his rookie year, and he got thrown into the mix in late in week three, first start in week four. That was a roller coaster for him. David Johnson wasn't playing well. I mean, you had Mike McCoy was the offensive coordinator for the first 7 weeks, and he was very uncreative. He didn't call good game plans. I mean, it was a mess, and not all that was Steve Wilkes' fault. I mean, from what I understand, McCoy wasn't exactly his first choice. That was kind of a decision that was made for him. A lot of things that went into this year's team were out of Wilkes's realm, out of his control. But there were some things that were his fault. I mean, the coaching staff wasn't exactly, I think, an NFL caliber coaching staff. There were this defense wasn't very good, and for a guy who came in with it as a defensive quote unquote savant, that I think was a huge issue. And I've been told, one of their arguing points internally is that the defense was on the field so much because his offense was so incompetent. But at the same time, they were giving up, you know, 150 yards in the first half of them games, 200 yards overall. And run defense, I think, is a huge staple of what this team has been successful with the last few years. And that wasn't there. So I think that a large part of it was out of Wilkes' control, but there were a few things, a few major things that were in his control.
Yeah, but and of course, I'm just amazed. Why are they so bad at stopping the run?
I mean, it's baffling because of how good they have been over the last few years, and there really haven't been many changes. I mean, I think part of it is a switch to the 3-4 did not go as planned. That wasn't very smooth, and I think the other part of it is the coaching. I mean, I was told multiple times this year, some on the record, some off the record, that guys would not listen to coaches. Coaches wanted guys in certain gaps. Players would get out of them, and they would try to freelance, do their own thing. And, I mean, it was a little bit of coaching, a little bit of players, but it just was overall just a kind of a disaster because, guys, I mean, this front seven was getting gashed for so many yards this year, and that hadn't happened before.
I guess, yeah, and another issue, too, is like it seems like forever they've been trying to find that other cornerback on the other side of Patrick Peterson and just couldn't do it.
Yeah, that was a huge issue this year. They started with Jamar Taylor. He struggled. They went to Ben Wickery. He struggled, and they end up cutting both of those guys. Now they're on David Amerson. He's a third starting cornerback opposite Patrick Peterson this year. I mean, that's unheard of. That's incredible, and I think this is going to be an important offseason for that, because if you can lock down that other cornerback, I think there's a lot of stress that will be taken out of this defense. I think it'll help the back end and the front end, but you need to secure that other side, because teams are staying away from Patrick Peterson yet again. They're attacking those guys. They're trying to exploit and take advantage of that side, and it's working.
So what? And of course, I don't know, is Steve Keim in trouble, or is he going to be able to survive?
It looks like he's going to survive, but like I pointed out, a lot of these issues stem from him. I mean, bad draft, bad decisions in free agency. You know, he was suspended 5 weeks for a DUI back in the summer, so he wasn't there for training camp with Steve Wilks. I mean, that's a crucial time for a new head coach and their GM to kind of get to know each other, to mold, to work on the roster, and Steve Keim just simply wasn't there. So, but it seems to me that he's going to survive. I still think, just like Wilks, there's that chance that he could get fired, but I think the odds of him staying are greater than him going.
So now what kind of replacement are they going to be looking for?
I think the most obvious answer is you got to find someone who is an offensive-minded head coach. I mean, you have the quarterback of the future. You have your franchise running back. You need to put points on the board. This offense is ranked last in a countless categories. They need to fix that immediately, and I think you need to go find someone who can really work with Josh Rosen, really mold him, because you didn't move up five spots in the draft after skipping the quarterbacks for so many years to let him just kind of fail, basically. And he had a rough year. It's something that a lot of people are talking about, because for whatever reason, he had a very rough year, and he did not play well a lot of times. So I think that they need to fix that immediately, and I think that should be the focus of the next head coach.
Oh, no question. And I would imagine Mike McCarthy will be a candidate. Now, is he going to look at that as a good situation? Because I know his position is going to be, if it's not going to be the best situation, he may not coach next year.
Here's what's interesting about the Mike McCarthy situation is, like, yes, you're right. He most likely will be a candidate here. I mean, he has the offensive background. He would be a good fit for Rosen, but a lot of people compare Josh Rosen to Aaron Rodgers. So does Mike McCarthy want to go from years of dealing with Aaron Rodgers to more years of dealing with someone who's very similar to him? I think that would be the biggest question.
That will be interesting to see. Now, and of course, I mean, David Johnson, as you mentioned, did not have the season, you know, so he had some. Why didn't it work out? Obviously, offensive line had to play a big role in that.
Offensive line. I mean, I think play calling early on. I mean, there were games where they would call 10, 12 runs up the middle for him. He doesn't. That's not necessarily his game. He needs to get out in space, create some mismatches, use his athleticism. He has a great jump cut. He needed to be more. He needed to be used better. He wasn't really used as a receiver early on. I mean, that's where Bruce Arians had so much success with him back in 2016, which was his last full season. And Mike McCoy didn't really do that. Once Byron Leftwich took over in week 8, we saw him line up as a receiver. There was some more opportunity for him to be a playmaker. But I think generally speaking, he just was not used as a playmaker this year. And I think part of it was him. I think there's some confidence issues. He had some ball control issues, but generally speaking, I think he wasn't used the way he should have been used.
Yeah. Back to Steve Wilkes for a second. I thought it was pretty funny what he had to joke around because there was no podium for him yesterday.
Oh, yeah. The reason there was no podium is because we handed out the PFWA award. So it was they decided to not have a podium to make it easier to take the group picture. But I don't think he necessarily knew that. So he got up there and he joked that, like, you know, at this point, when you get to the end, they even take away your podium. So I don't know if he was talking about the end of the season or the end of his tenure, but it was very telling either way.
Yeah, I know. It's really crazy to see. So it's just been just a weird, weird year. And again, I never thought it would ever get this bad. So now they look ahead to the draft. What type of are they going to go, Nick Bosa, or where do you think they go?
I mean, they don't necessarily need a pass rusher off the edge, but I think if they do keep the first pick, I think he would be he'd be the common sense pick. But there are so many other needs. You need a cornerback. You need offensive line help. You need a big receiver. So, I mean, I think there's a chance that if they lose, obviously, again, on Sunday to Seattle, they'll secure the number one pick. And if they do that, I think there's a chance we could see them trade out of the number one and, you know, stockpile some picks this year, maybe in the next couple of years as well, and try to build this roster from the ground up.
Just a weird, weird season. So, yeah, and I would imagine, I guess, was the strangest part of the season the game in the StubHub Center, because it was like there was hardly anybody in the stands.
Oh, that was far from the weirdest game of the season. They lost to Oakland at home. That was weird. They lost to the Lions. That was weird. I mean, there's a lot of weird games this year, but I mean, I would say the Raiders game, I mean, they should have beat them soundly with how much talent they had over the Raiders, and they barely, I mean, they lost that game, and they were only up by one late in the game, too.
Unbelievable. Well, it was just a very strange season, and I'm sure you're going to be looking forward to just getting out of it. Just get the game over tomorrow and move on to a new year.
Well, we have to get through Monday, because I'm sure it'll be a busy day. And then once we get through Monday, then we can start looking forward to a little break.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, thank you as always, and I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Anytime, John.
Okay, Josh Weinfuss from ESPN.com. Okay, we'll get to the phone lines and JB and everybody else. And again, 90-minute show today, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton, how are we doing this fine Saturday morning, my friend?
Oh, hanging in there.
Yeah, got to keep hanging in there. We got a few games coming up Sunday that's gonna have some high implications as far as the playoffs is concerned.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Let's first things first. Pittsburgh. What's going to happen with that?
I don't know. Well, right now, I mean, they're in a tough spot. I mean, you know, they'll beat Cincinnati, but the problem is if Cleveland can't beat Baltimore, then all of a sudden, you know, Pittsburgh's out of the playoffs.
You look at Cleveland. I'm going to tell you right now, with Greg Williams, you know, and I know you were just talking about a coaching search, and I know Cleveland might be into the coaching search, but I'll tell you right now, Greg Williams and that offensive coordinator, that team is playing pretty good football.
Oh, agreed. No, they've done a great job. And, you know, it's like I think it's going to probably get Baker Mayfield Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Definitely. And, you know, the thing it is, Mr. Clayton, I would not be surprised if they go to Baltimore, shut down that Jackson and that running game, and beat them.
I know.
It would not surprise me.
Would not surprise me one bit. No, it is possible.
Well, because you look at them, I've been watching them. They're pulling out all stops, and they're having fun out there playing football.
Oh, agreed. Mayfield's done a good job. The defense is starting to come around. I mean, I can't believe that they're 7-7-1. I thought they'd win five games.
I know, you know, Mr. Clayton, all due at the start of the year. They probably could have been at least in the playoff hunt. If you look at it, mm-hmm. from the way they've been playing and how they play, I mean, they could 8-7-1 would not be out of the realm for them at the end of this year. So I'm gonna tell you right now, Baltimore's got elite defense. They're playing good ball on the defensive side, and Jackson makes the right throws just to keep it going, keep it on schedule. But they're primarily running the ball and doing some things with him like that. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Greg Williams has got a pretty good record against rookie quarterbacks.
He does, and now it's
him.
I mean, now the only thing that's going to work against them, like a lot of teams, they're not very good on the road. That's a problem.
True. But they went to Denver. They went to Denver when you caught. Well, I didn't think they had a chance over there in Denver on a Saturday night, and they took Denver out. Don't be surprised, Mr. Clayton. And this is a divisional opponent.
Right.
I got people that they know well. They know real well. Let's get to one right now with high implications, the Colts and the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is Marcus Mariota going to play?
Debatable. It's going to go down to the game time. I'd say right now, no. I mean, he may try, but when he comes out Wednesday and says his body's tingly, that's not good.
No, not good at all. And, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, the Colts is going to be one of the teams in the AFC that I think a lot of teams really don't want to deal with in that AFC. Because
mm-hmm.
you look at the Colts, and you look at them on the road, too, this year. They're pretty good on the road. So, you know, hats off to Frank Wright for what he did for that team this year. Because I didn't expect for him to play that good this year. And Andrew Luck has come back. He's come back to Andrew Luck-type form, you know.
Well, and that's the one thing that's – and Andrew Luck is 10-0 against Tennessee. Can you imagine that?
Oh, geez.
10-0. He's never lost to him.
Mr. Clayton. That's not good.
No.
If you 10-0 against a team like that, man, that's not good. I mean, and if you don't have Marcus Mariota playing, you got Blaine Gabbert starting at your quarterback, that's a recipe for a disaster. Who's going to take the number one seed in the AFC, Mr. Clayton?
I think, well, you know, the debate's going to be, you know, can Kansas City win this game? And Denver's going to give them a fight. So if Kansas City wins, then they get number one seed. But I tell you what, Denver's going to give them a battle. This will be Vance Joseph's last game, and so that could be interesting.
You think Vance Joseph is going to be part of Black Monday?
Yes.
Wow. Don't you think sometimes teams overreact as far as all the coaching changes that they do on these teams to try to get them to a certain area? And I know they want to win, but don't you think sometimes you should have a little patience with that coaching staff? And give them a little self-insurance that they could coach this team and get them ready?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah, because I think there's too many firings. I mean, if you have seven firings a year, for the most part, I think you're really in a tough stead. I think it doesn't work out that way. You're not going to find the replacements. And this is the weakest pool of replacement hires you can find this year.
Thank you, sir. I mean, how many offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, or retread coaches you have out there to go to?
Mm-hmm.
Mike McCarthy, oh yeah, he's the hot commodity right now, Mike McCarthy. But who else do you have to go to? You're going to have to go to the search of offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators. And I think you just set yourself back every time you keep changing coaches.
Right.
I think you've got to ride. You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers is the best model for that. How many coaches the Pittsburgh Steelers had in their whole their span?
Since 1969, they've had three.
Thank you.
They're up there usually competing for a playoff spot every year.
And they've always had success.
Right.
You know, that's why I say I look at that when you see some of these coaching hires and changes. I think you need to really throw caution to the wind when you're just hiring and firing coaches because you hear what the fans are talking about or this or that. I think a lot of teams should think about that. I was just hearing you talk with the guy with the Arizona Cardinals. 1 year and they want to get rid of it already. You know, Mike McCarthy only goes to one team.
Right.
Yeah. If you fire seven coaches, he's got his pick of the litter where he's going to go.
Mm-hmm. No, it's bad. I mean, it's a really bad situation. But, that's what teams tend to do for some crazy reason.
Yes, they do. Let's get back to a little football, Mr. Clayton. The New England Patriots, you're looking at them coming into the playoffs right now. Do you think they can turn it on and be the New England Patriots that everybody knows, or are they having some issues?
No, they're having some issues, but I think where the battle is going to be is that you look and you see a team that if they get home field advantage, which they can, then all of a sudden everything goes right. I mean, they're 3-5 on the road. They're 7-0 at home. They're a hard team to beat when they're at home.
Yes, they are. They're a very difficult team. But you know the thing I noticed though and watched about them? They don't really have a real good pass rush over there, Mr. Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and Gronkowski, I think he's starting to suffer those issues of his body having those problems and stuff
right,
like that.
Right, I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know he's not the same player that he once was. But, I mean, and then losing Josh Gordon also is not going to help him out. And Julian Edelman is a year away from that knee injury, so he's not going to be in the best shape possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know, Mr. Clayton. I think right now dealing in that they need to play at home. Are they going to be the second seed coming up into the
They have a chance,
playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, there's right now, if Houston loses, then they have a chance to be the number two seed. I mean, right now they're the number two seed, and if let's say Kansas City loses, all of a sudden they're number one.
Wow.
How crazy
you know
is
how
that?
How amazing that would be, because I'm going to tell you right now, Houston needs to do something, and I know they can't do it right quick, and they can't do it on the fly. That offensive line is terrible.
Awful. Absolutely awful.
Terrible. Terrible. You can't go into the playoffs playing with an offensive line like that. You're going to get DeSean Jackson killed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why they changed everything around and tried to limit the number of passes thrown by their quarterback, DeSean Watson.
Yeah, DeSean Watson, my fault. And then, last spot in the NFC. How do you see that coming up?
Because it's interesting because, you know, if Minnesota loses, then it could be Philadelphia, and that could be a dangerous team in the playoffs. You know, Minnesota should be more dangerous than they are. But boy, how bad's it going to be if you put $28 million a year in Kirk Cousins, and all of a sudden you're sitting out of the playoffs? That would be bad.
I know. That would be awful. What a bad investment that would be.
Mm-hmm.
To go to a team that you thought was on the cusp. I tell you right now, a lot of people at the start of the year thought they were on the cusp of being a Super Bowl team right there.
Right.
For Kirk Cousins. Now they possibly could be on the outside looking in. And Chicago still has something to play for, right? Because if the Rams lose, Chicago could be the two seed.
That's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's still some incentive over there for them to play. Are the Rams, should the Rams be worried about Todd Gurley?
No, I think, because remember, if they just make sure they get the bye week, then they'll have time to get him ready. So I think they're just being cautious about it. Hey, JB, thank you for the phone call, and have a good New Year.
Happy New Year to you and yours, Mr. Clayton. We'll talk next week, my friend.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there.
Good, good. So, the Raiders beat the Broncos last week, John, and you know, they played, I think, their most complete game this past week. And, boy, you got to feel bad for Vance Joseph. The players just weren't playing for him, John. And they look really disorganized out there on the gridiron, John.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's baffling, but they don't they look off. And when they were 6-6, they looked like everything was going to be okay. Now everything is not okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And the Raiders, what do you think, John? They're going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City?
No. I think it's safe to say that's not going to happen. It's like, again, I know, because, again, Kansas City needs that game.
Well, Kansas City needs the game, John, but as you know, Mahomes doesn't have the prowess he once did, let's say, 3 weeks ago. And, there's a few chinks in the armor. We've talked about this with he doesn't have the weapons he used to. Do you think he's going to be the MVP, John?
I think so, yeah. Particularly if he gets over 50 touchdown passes. He's got 48 touchdown passes.
Yeah, I think for the totality of the season and the fact that it's only his second season, his first season as a full-time starter, he's done a remarkable job. You know, John, what I love about you is, once you take a look at the data, you make pretty convincing case just based on the data and no other indication than you've been always down on the Cleveland Browns, and yet the Cleveland Browns are playing well. And so the data's changing. You're making a different decision. That's fantastic.
That's what you got to do.
A nice surprise.
Let's put it this way. It's like, I thought they were going to win 5 games this year. And here, I think, 5 out of the last 6 has been won by Baker Mayfield. So they've really come on, and they're playing good ball, and they have a chance to maybe upset Baltimore tomorrow.
Right. And you know what? The Raiders were given a gift with some bad calls against the Browns. That's the only reason I think the Raiders won that game, because Cleveland beat them up and down the gridiron, John. There was no question about it in my mind. And I hate to say that about Cleveland Black. But they're playing better, John. They're playing better, and it seems as though they've got a lot of the kinks worked out as far as what they're going to be doing going forward. What do you think, John?
Yeah, well, I mean, I tell you what, they're about a year younger, because now they've started to weed out a lot of the old guys. Now, a lot of the old guys just broke down because they had too many old guys as it was. But, no, they're playing a little bit better. And I think the big thing is they have no pass rush.
Right.
None. Zero.
And Clowney is a free agent. Am I right about that, John, after the season?
No. I mean, they won't let him out of there. I mean, he's technically a free agent. But, again, they can put the franchise tag on him if necessary.
Yeah, and there's not going to be a lot of edge rushers out there on the free agent market.
No, but again, it's a good draft for that. I mean, it's a good draft for edge rushers.
Okay, that's right. But you know what? They got to hit on those draft choices. what is Gruden's 2 out of 10 as far as notable players in the draft? Sebastian Janikowski and Aqib Talib, and that's it. Those are the only names that I know of that he's drafted in the first round that are notable. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he hasn't done well. And
no, he has not.
You know, that's me looking at the data saying, I don't know. Everyone's counting on these draft choices. And they better hit on him, and I'm not sure whether they will, John.
I think it's going to be shaky. I agree with you on that.
But that's the
problem. I mean, you gave away the known, which is Mac and a good receiver, and now it's the unknown. Amari Cooper's still pretty a decent receiver. Maybe it wasn't working for him there, but he's still pretty good.
Well, last 2 weeks he's disappeared. Has only 54 yards and you know a few catches here and there. Just like he did with the Raiders. He tends to disappear. And, you know, so let's see what happens in the playoffs. And that bodes well for the Seahawks if things go the way we think they're going to go. Because Seahawks are going to give the Dallas Cowboys a good game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because stopping the run is going to be very difficult.
Indeed. Indeed. Yes, indeed, John. Rookie of the Year on defense, what do you think, John?
That's a real tough one. I'm leading toward Bradley Chubb because of the sacks. Certainly Darius Leonard's got to be in the mix.
What about Van Der Esch?
And Van Der Esch has got to be in the mix, too. But, again, I think that the numbers kind of lean toward Chubb. And, of course, you got to look at Derwin James.
Oh, Derwin James. Yes, indeed. I mean, that guy just brings the wood, John. It's incredible. He's a powerhouse. And sometimes he overcommits. But, my gosh, he's got great instincts. He's a great football player. Chargers should be happy with him going forward, John. He's a quality player, John.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah. Hey, Raider Jim, thank you, and have a good new year.
Hey, you too, John. Bye-bye.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rasheed in Bothell. Hey, Rasheed.
Hey, good morning, Professor. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm fine. Hey, Professor, hope you had a good Christmas and a happy new year to you and your family and actually all your staff as well here at 710.
Well, thank you so much for that.
Professor, I was looking back at the season and, we spoke more than a couple of times during the off season and stuff. And one thing that you always maintained and I always said was that, Seahawks as a team under Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson have never gotten away. Like they don't go away easily, and that's why Russell Wilson hasn't lost a game with more than two scores in like three games in his career and stuff. And so that was the premise with the way Pete Carroll coaches and stuff, and that's what they showed the league, that you can never count the Seattle Seahawks out. But I think they should just give the award to Pete Carroll because Matt Nagy has done a great job, but I'm so proud of this team, what they've done, and they've totally exceeded my expectations as well. But Professor, I wanted to give kudos to you because you believed in this team, I think, more than any other person in this area.
I know. The only time I had a little bit of a doubt when they lost to Chicago and were 0-2, and I was thinking of taking the 9-win prediction down to 8, and I didn't because I thought, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, and they sure responded.
Yeah, no. You were really steadfast in your opinion. But, Professor, it's so funny that whenever people have criticized after the Vikings game that Russell Wilson didn't play well, even though he made the play that pretty much sealed the game, the 40-yard run and everything, and then people saying, he's not throwing the ball, and then he comes back and, throws. I don't know if I've seen a better quarterback game in the season than Russell Wilson played against the Chiefs. It was just, amazing, how he did this and stuff. But I feel so confident, and if they can hit on a couple of draft picks and lost in the shuffle, John Schneider has gotten a really bad rap, maybe deservedly so for the last couple of drafts, but slowly this draft class is looking really good. And if you had Will Disley not getting injured and stuff, I think he would have played a real good role as well. And I think if they can hit on a couple of other good draft choices next season and stuff, I think this team is on the upswing, and I think they can give Rams a run for their money. I won't bet against them winning the division next year, sir.
No, I would agree, because I think what you look at, here's the motto I use. That's why I try to find comparables, whether it's a player or whether it's, you know, models or things like that. You know, look at the Los Angeles Chargers. All right, so they get off to an 0-4 start. Yeah. They win 9 out of their last 12 games. They finish outside the playoffs at 9-7. All right. So now they get to look where they are this season. You know, they're still like one play away from maybe being the number one seed. But, you know, so I think what you can look at, if you can pull those 9 wins after the slow start, then you can start to think, if you add enough for next year and the guys start to mature from the previous year, then you're looking at maybe 10, 11, and possibly 12.
Yeah, and Professor, I think like in the next, like they do have to address the wide receiver. Like they do need like a speedy receiver with all this play action. If we had a speedy receiver, and then this offense would really like evolve. And
well, I think they have. I mean, they've got the speedy receiver. I mean, that's Tyler Lockett. I mean, they've got speed in Jaron Brown, speed in David Moore. I think what they just need is a big receiver.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's why, you know, the Brandon Marshall type or Tanner McElvoy or somebody like that. See, because you know, Tyler Lockett now has emerged as a very good receiver. And the 1-2 punch that they have with Baldwin and Lockett is really good.
Yeah. And, Professor, last question. So do you think the Russell Wilson extension will come this offseason, or would they wait out a year?
It's not a matter. I mean, they'll try, but I think it's going to be the agents, because remember, he's a baseball agent, and he's going to be very difficult to deal with. And so I think that probably puts it more in 2020 than 2021 or 2019 with the threat of maybe having to do the franchise tag. Now, again, if Russell Wilson overrules the agent and tries to get a deal done, then they can maybe get it done at $32 to $33 million.
And he deserves every penny of it. I think, like, his play this season has been, like, if we didn't have Mahomes, I think the last couple of weeks, Breeze and Rivers have cooled down a little bit. Mahomes has played really well, and I think he will win the MVP. But in my opinion, I see a lot of football, and I think Russell Wilson is this, like, should be, after 16 weeks, should be the second in MVP voting. But, you know, Mahomes and Breeze are going to top those, but he's played exam. Hey, Professor, really thank you so much for all your reporting and memories of this year, and you have a happy new year, sir.
Hey, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. I am absolutely fantastic, and I hope you and Mrs. Clayton get a chance to watch the Irish play a little bit today at 1 o'clock on ESPN.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll try.
Just for, you know, a few snaps. You don't have to watch the whole game. I know you're very busy.
Yeah, yeah.
You should really check out this kid, Ian Book. Unbelievable Montana-esque kind of quarterback for the Irish. 70% pass completion for the season, Mr. Clayton.
Okay.
The pros aren't even that good.
Well, I mean, Drew Brees is at 70-some percent.
Well,
he got about three quarterbacks at 70%. I mean, Kirk Cousins is almost like 70%.
Well, Mr. Clayton, okay. But, irregardless of that, the game is going to be a thriller. This insane idea that the Irish are outclassed and outnumbered, I don't think so. The Irish have Clemson right where they want them. Thinking they're better.
Clemson's better, but
beat the Irish.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to happen today.
Well,
and
we'll
I
see.
I hope Oklahoma can pull the unthinkable and beat Alabama.
Probably not, man. I
well,
think it's Alabama.
Know, I don't disagree with you there, but I think Clemson's vulnerable. And I hope you have a fantastic New Year. Anything special going on?
Nothing special. Nope.
Just at home with the lovely Mrs. Clayton?
That is correct.
Fantastic. Put some logs on the fireplace and have a great day.
Hey, Irish, thank you so much and have a great New Year.
You
enjoy
too,
yourself, boy. And get the steak out today. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Hey, Tara.
Hi, Mr. Clayton. How are you today?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm great. If we were fortunate enough to get to the playoffs in the first round, why do you think the odds are better of us stacking up against the Rams versus the Saints?
Just because, the division team, they've had two good games against them that were very close. I think that you can see that they're not intimidated by them. Again, I think the Rams certainly would have the edge, but particularly with being on the road. But I think that they match up pretty well against them.
I agree. And Goff has slowed down a little bit in the past few weeks versus when you play Breeze. Breeze is a Super Bowl winner. He has a good wide receiver in Thomas. And as good as our secondary is playing right now, he's like a 16-year veteran and can exploit our holes in our secondary if we don't get to him enough.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I mean, it's again, I think it's still going to be difficult, but they have a chance. I mean, you notice they didn't back down when they played them down in Los Angeles. It was a pretty good game.
Yeah, and we're stopping Gurley very good, too. I think Goff is a little bit overrated. I think if you get pressure in his face, he's easy to crack. And I would kind of give more props to the head coach because I don't know where he'd actually be today if he didn't have Sean McVay as a coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the argument is he's a system quarterback and he works well in the system. Without that system, he would not be as effective.
No. Why do you think the Rams' defense is giving up so many points? Like on paper at the beginning of the year, they signed Sue. They had, you knew Donald would come out at one point, and you got Marcus Peters and Tlaib. Why do you think they're giving up more points then?
I contend that Ndamukong Suh's not having a great season. He's not lived up to the $14 million that they're paying him. They still have a little bit of holes at the linebacker spot. They're not big at linebacker. And they get some shakiness at safety. I think it hurt when they didn't have Aqib Talib. They had the one stretch with Marcus Peters. Some of the stats are a little askew because, again, when you score that many points, there's a lot of garbage time type of yardage and stuff like that. But, that's the thing. I mean, they have been vulnerable. Not as bad as the Chiefs, but they've been vulnerable on defense.
Do you think if Doug's healthy enough going up against good defenses like the Cowboys, do you think the passing game will work?
Oh, I think it will, yeah. I think you saw it in the Carolina game. When they needed the passing game, it was there. And as long as Doug is out there and the group is healthy, I think they can throw him. Because if they need to get 300 yards, they can do it. You saw that, I think, again, in the Carolina game. It was pretty effective. And so it's there if they need it.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Tara, thank you, and have a great new year. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey, John, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.
Hey, big game for Washington Tuesday at the Rose Bowl, first time in 18 years, of course. Chris Peterson, now this is his third New Year's Six bowl game, and he's 0-2. Does he have a little pressure on him to not even win it, but just to have a good showing? Because the last two now, granted, they've been against some pretty good darn teams, but he's got that, you even mentioned, I think, he's got that percentage of, second to Urban Meyer.
There's no pressure on him whatsoever. None.
You don't
Zero.
Think so? Okay.
No, in fact, the only pressure was trying to get him signed to a contract extension, and they did that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I just wonder because, they got blown out by by Penn State last year. They had a tough showing against Alabama, you know, his second year. And I'm just wondering, you know, and he's had such a good run in some of these bowl games that I figured, you know, maybe this might be the one he's got to maybe show have at least a good showing against a good Ohio State team with some really good athletes. So I'm just...
I think what you're looking at, I mean, the pressure has been more on the quarterback, because he's the one that struggles in the big games. And so that's why they definitely need a good game from their quarterback.
That being said, with Jacob Eason probably being in the driver's seat next year, let me just get a quick synopsis from you. Let's say he averages 300 yards a game next year. He's got a TD to interception ratio, maybe 25 to 9 or 25 to 10. Does he come out, you think? Is he good enough to come out and... Because all I've heard is that he's got a cannon for an arm.
Oh, yeah. I think he will, without question. I think, I'm not mistaken, he only has 1 year of eligibility remaining. So he's going to come out.
I wasn't sure if he had the one or maybe even two because of the red shirt and the whole thing. And I know he came out. He didn't play. He came out after his sophomore year. He transferred. So that's, I'm just wondering. So I wasn't quite sure. So anyways, looking forward to it, John. I enjoy your work each and every Saturday and every day. So have a good day. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike in Tacoma. Hey, Mike.
Hey, John. I was just wondering, what's the city have to do to get the NFL draft in their city? And what are the top five place kickers being paid?
Let's see, but right now I'd say that it's still going to be a long shot, because what you have to try to do is, you put a bid on it, and, you know, like Denver's trying to do it. Dallas has already had it. They're going to go, and it's just down the line as far as that.
So you got to put your bid in and then get in line and wait. We're probably like, if we wanted to be like the 15th city waiting already.
Yeah, it's a long shot. It's just probably not going to happen. And I think, you know, for the most part, they'll try to move it around as much as they can. Now they're going to get into a little situation now where, you know, they've got to take care of Cleveland for the 100th year, and, you know, have the Hall of Fame involved in it. And so it's just a long shot. I mean, and on the kicking thing, I mean, Justin Tucker is the one at about $4.5 million you start. And so then you go down from there. So it's between $4 and $4.5 is what the place kickers are getting at the top.
Okay, so do you place those figures? Are they worth that amount of money, those top five? Are they worth that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see how it is this year. There's so much more inconsistencies with the kickers, both on field goals and extra points.
Well, and that's what I was getting at, is that Seattle maybe next year up their game a little bit, like they did with the punter, and spend a little extra, because I think a game or two maybe would be a win there, right?
Well, I mean, they didn't have to spend on the punter. I mean, he's a draft choice.
Well, I mean, but everybody gave him kind of a little guff on that, right? I mean, they thought, what the hell, but it paid off. But I'm just saying, if you pay the money for the place kicker, then we're not going to be getting a lot of missed extra points and field goals, or, you know, an older kicker pulling a muscle in a bad field and everything.
Well, that's the thing, because, you know, look, I know that they gave Chris Boswell a contract extension in Pittsburgh, and he's on injured reserve yesterday,
right. Yep.
And he struggled all year. I mean, it's been a struggling year. The ironic part is that Stephen Hauschka, after having the bad season 2 years ago, has had a very good couple years now with the Buffalo Bills.
Unbelievable. Well, we knew... You know, and do you think we paid for not paying him? I mean, did we kind of...
I think they
like
paid a price last year, yeah. No question.
Yeah. All right, John, you have a good New Year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Well, the Washington State Cougars had a big victory last night, saving the Pac-12 a little bit. They get 28-20, sixth victory in the Alamo Bowl, beating Iowa State. Gardner Minshew was again 299 yards, sets the school record, has just amazing numbers. And of course, it's just so much fun to watch. It's a shame that, you know, he's no longer going to be with the program, because now he goes into the pros and see where he gets drafted and all that stuff. But what a great season for him, and you know, what a great season for Washington State. They get up with 11 wins. As far as the Seahawks, it doesn't look good for DJ Fluker being able to play, but that'll be a game time decision. J.R. Sweezy hoping to be able to play next week with that kind of unusual foot injury. It'll be game time decisions as far as what to do with Tedrick Thompson. You know, he's got that chest injury and a couple other guys. But overall, Seahawks with a chance to get the 10th win, lock up the number 5 seed. They take on an Arizona Cardinal team that has really just been terrible this year with 3 wins. And so they come in. There's a likelihood on Monday that Steve Wilks, their head coach, is going to be fired. So lots of wild things going on there. Monday's going to be, you know, the firing day. It's Black Monday, and we'll see who's going to go. And, of course, doesn't sound good for Dirk Cutter, the Tampa Bay coach. He was pretty much saying his goodbyes yesterday, so I think he knows it's going to be good. You know that Todd Bowles is going to be probably out, and so overall, lots to go coming up on Monday after the season when you know there's going to be firings, and those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, Jesmyn McIntyre, heading back from the Alamo Bowl, and boy, what a good win for Washington State.
Well, it certainly was, John, and happy belated Christmas, merry belated Christmas to you and Pat. I'm glad that, the Cougs made it down here safely in a crazy weather pattern that was going over here in Texas, and I cannot believe what a crazy game that was. The Alamo Bowl is traditionally a wonderful game. It's usually exciting. It's usually very high scoring. And the Cougs jumped out early here, but Iowa State's a very good team. They made some adjustments, and man, they really took it down to the wire here. Huge win for the program, though. 11th win of the season, the most wins by any Cougar team in school history. So it really was just a fabulous one.
It's so much fun to watch Gardner Minshew. I mean, he's so unique compared to other quarterbacks. I mean, he has so much fun, and the guys just really respond to him.
Yes. Exactly, and that's one of the biggest things is that the coaches have talked about throughout the season is watching the teammates respond to him, because he came in, into this program out of nowhere. No one knew him at all. He was playing at Eastern Carolina, a graduate transfer, and, he's from Mississippi, so he's not even a familiar face, a familiar name to anyone in this program, and obviously coming off of the tragedy that the Cougs had, there was a lot of uncertainty at the quarterback position, and Gardner came in here and he didn't try to just take over this team. He tried to earn his teammates' trust, and also he came in and competed for the position. He didn't come in and think he was going to be the quarterback. He was grateful for the opportunity to compete for it, and I think that you just see the way that his teammates responded to him. It allowed him to play, just as free and loose as he wanted to, because he knew he was playing for his teammates and vice versa.
No doubt. And so now, what's going to be the I guess now you have to start looking ahead to next year. What are they going to do at quarterback?
Well, there are a couple of different things. The young group that was originally going to compete for the starting job, is still going to be there. I think that the edge goes to Trey Tinsley. He's a guy that I've seen show a lot of maturity on the sideline. He's kind of a coach on the sideline for Gardner. I've noticed it throughout the year where he's on the headset. He's constantly talking to him, and I always know, just, having played, a college sport, I know that when you coach, it makes you a better player, and I notice a lot of that from him. So as a young player, I really do see him being, an emerging person who could be a favorite for the job. But then you got to look at Cam Cooper, who was, the big star recruit that came out, and he's got a lot of potential too. There's a lot of even competition at that position right now. But then the thing that always looms in the back of my mind is looking at the success that Gardner has had. And, why wouldn't this be one of the most attractive programs to come to in the country? If you're a graduate transfer, it wouldn't surprise me. And I don't think that they're necessarily going after someone right now, or there's a commit in on the horizon. but I do think that it's a potential, and it wouldn't surprise me if they went for a graduate transfer once again.
Interesting. But of course, I would imagine that the reputation of Mike Leach has continued to build because, again, having this type of season when nobody expected it.
Yes, and that's one of the greatest things. And, I mean, you know, we talk about the roster turnover, but the entire coaching staff got gutted, and then it's not, you know, for, you know, any fault of their own. They had such a successful season last year that a lot of them got hired out of here. And so you saw guys get promoted to, you know, bigger and better things, and specifically Alex Grinch, who went on to become the co-defensive coordinator for Ohio State. Tracy Clays comes in here. He was formerly of Minnesota and actually coached against the Cougs 2 years ago in the first Holiday Bowl that they appeared in under Mike Leach. So I have to give a ton of credit to the coaching staff to come in here and earn the trust of the players. And it just further, like you said, you know, it furthers the legend, the person that Mike Leach is, not only on the coaching the player side, but the coaching the coaches side. You know, the Mike Leach branches continue to extend within his coaching tree. And, you know, like that national perspective that we're seeing just continues to grow. And yes, you know, one of the top running back recruits out of Ohio committed to the Cougs on National Signing Day. You know, you're seeing more of that where, you know, these guys, you know, it was mostly an in-state recruiting team up and down the West Coast. They're seeing guys that want to come to this program, and you talk about the running back position coming to the air raid offense. Well, they're really utilized here. So if you're any kind of offensive player, this is an attractive scheme you want to play in. And then you look at the defensive side of the ball and how they've evolved over the years with the coaching turnover. It's just a pretty well-rounded team by this point, and Coach Leach is loving every minute of it.
Oh, I can imagine. How was he after the game?
Very satisfied, I guess, is the best way to put it. Coach Leach is an extremely emotional person. But I had the chance to interview him after the game, and he pretty much just told me how proud he is of the team's composure and their ability. He actually quoted John Wooden, and he said the best teams have, you know, players who are everyone's a leader. There's not just one guy that steps up, and, you know, the players, no one is selfish on this team. And he was really proud of that. He actually said on the podium as he was accepting the Alamo Bowl trophy, he said, "I may be more proud of this team than any other I've ever coached." And I thought that was an extremely profound statement considering, you know, just his longevity in coaching. And he truly meant it. I don't think Coach Leach ever says anything he doesn't mean.
No, I would imagine he wouldn't. How was the departure for Gardner Minshew? How was he in his post-game press conference, and what kind of reaction was there with him?
You know, they stay on the field for a long time because the charter doesn't go out immediately after the game like they do after every other one. I think they left this morning, so the players weren't in a huge hurry to get out of there. And Gardner Minshew spent as much time on that field hanging out with Cougs fans as anyone else. He was up and down the sidelines. Everyone was shouting for him. All the Cougs fans stayed late, and he came over and made sure he greeted every single one of them. I mean, if you're going to come to a program for 1 year and have the kind of success that he had and the amount of fun that he had as a college student athlete, he really soaked it in, and he got every single minute out of it. He clearly bonded with Mike Leach, great relationship with him, and then his teammates looking up to him. You know, he was very emotional after the Apple Cup, and, you know, a lot of us thought it was because of the loss, but I think a lot of it also stemmed from he wanted to do right by his teammates, and he felt like that game, you know, came down to him. And I can tell you this much, the success that the team had, the win in the Alamo Bowl, everyone contributed, but he really came down and made that happen. When the Cougs had a really rough third quarter, it's odd actually this season that's not been a good one for him. Coach Leach came over and pretty much tore into the team. And Gardner Minshew, after Leach was finished, took over that huddle and say, "Hey guys, guess what? We're going to come back and we're going to find a way to win this game, okay? It doesn't matter. I don't care what we have to do. We're going to win this game." And lo and behold, he's the one that put the team on his shoulders and they did it.
Fantastic. So, again, and how did you sum up the recruiting class that Mike was able to have? You talk about the running back, top running back. How that and the team that's coming back next year?
Well, they got a pretty young roster, which is good. They had a huge turnover last year, and this year they've got a lot coming back. Obviously, they lose some leadership specifically at the quarterback position, obviously, in Gardner. And then on the defensive side of the ball, Peyton Poore and Hunter Dale are two huge guys that contribute, you know, both on the field and in a leadership capacity. But the rest of it, they're pretty young. The guys that they've got coming in, I don't know, will see the field immediately, which is a good thing when it comes to college football. The recruiting class is very strong, and kind of like I had mentioned, where they're recruiting not just in-state, but really across the country. They've got guys from Florida. I mentioned Ohio. It's a, you know, all of a sudden, it's instead of they are the hunted, instead of the hunters when it comes to, you know, just the attractiveness of the program. They're really, really proud. There's one guy on the defensive side of the ball, Armani Marsh, which they're very, very excited about, and I know that he had a ton of offers. And when it comes to getting defensive guys to commit, Mike Leach has basically understood that he was known for, you know, his offensive scheme, and people are going to come here to play in the air raid offense. But on the defensive side of the ball, all of a sudden, they're attractive as well. And I cannot give Tracy Clays enough credit for what he has done this year. Way in the beginning of the year, he came in, and instead of, I remember interviewing Hunter Dale after the first game of the season and saying, hey, you know, you guys are doing so well, what's going on, tell me about Tracy Clays. And he said he came in here and wanted to know what we were doing right. He wanted to learn from us, and that takes a lot of humility and a lot of respect from a coach to come in and saying, I'm not going to impose my scheme on you. I want to learn what you were doing right last year because it worked so well. And that is attractive to defensive players as well. So the recruiting class is very strong, but so is the current roster as it returns next year.
Well, it was a great season. I know you enjoyed it a lot, and we're looking forward to seeing you when you get back.
Yeah, thanks, John. Happy New Year, and go Cougs for the record.
There you go. That's been a great year. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show and for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We got about 7 more minutes left, and then we go to Washington State basketball. Give us a call. Let's go to Sean. Hey, Sean.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
Doing
Merry
well.
Christmas.
How about you?
Happy New Year, all that good stuff to you and your wife. And just wanted to say thank you for spending a Saturday with us working folks out here. Give us something good to listen to. And also, thank you for what you do with your wife. You're an inspiration to all husbands like me who hope we can be half the man you are taking care of our wives.
Well, I appreciate that.
And shout out to my wife. It's her 38th birthday today. But what I wanted to talk to you about was the Seahawks record. Everybody's predicting 8 wins or less for them this year, and then talking about getting to 9 or 10 wins, not that big a deal because it's just a couple more wins. And what I haven't heard anyone point out is it's not so much the extra win or two they're getting this year. Of course, you guys have all talked about it was expected to be a losing season and stuff like that with the so-called rebuilds going on. But just what that extra win or two does getting us to the playoffs, I think that's what's been the biggest part of this run they've gone on this year. So I think they've done a great job, and it just shows what a great coach Pete Carroll is.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, and that's why it's a shame he's probably not going to get coach of the year. I think that's going to be the odds are against it. But boy, what he's been able to do overall has been really sensational, because you know, they've become viable. They've changed everything around. Their philosophy is back to where it is. And I think you can see the great things are going to be ahead.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So appreciate you taking my phone call. It's always good good to talk to you. And I hope you have a happy new year, you and the missus. So.
Hey, thank you so much.
John, thanks.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Twin Lakes. Hey, Rick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
First of all, congratulate to all the Cougar fans out there and of course, those players who hung in there against a very tough opponent.
Yeah, that was
a very entertaining game.
Nice win. Very nice win.
Yeah, very entertaining. And also, congratulations to the Seahawks management and players for doing what a lot of the so-called experts said you could not do. It's a rebuilding year. There's no way you're going to the playoffs. Four wins.
I know.
Well,
guess what? They were wrong.
They were wrong again. The quickest way to be wrong is to tell the Seahawks they can't do something or they're not good enough. And
they do have that chip on their shoulder, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Russell played a fabulous game, dropping those balls straight out of the sky and into the bucket. The catches, the running backs played hard all around. It was a very satisfying year. And I hope continued success in the playoffs. One thing I noticed, can you tell me who's the youngest team age-wise in the playoffs?
Well, I think it's Seattle. They're like about third. I mean, probably, well, I would say the Rams and the Seahawks.
I don't know. Let's check it out. Well, I think, well, I know you got a database. But when I was looking at the age of the players on the roster, Dallas only has one player that's 30 years old. A lot of people talk about Jerry Jones and how he's mismanagement. Well, those guys won the division. They're in the playoffs. And they have one of the youngest, if not the youngest, team in the playoffs.
Right.
So Mary Jerry Jones is crazy like a fox.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, because right now I have them as like the third youngest team. You know, Seattle is the sixth youngest team. Let's see. Dallas is third. And Indianapolis is fifth.
Yeah.
Surprisingly,
anyway,
the Rams, Rams are 13th.
Kudos to all around. And once again, hey, happy New Year to you and your wife and the rest of your family.
And are you going to the game tomorrow?
Oh, most definitely. You know, they have the fan giveaway tomorrow, and there's no way my wife is going to allow me to miss that.
Well, that'll be good. Absolutely.
Take care.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421 ESPN. Let's go to Will in Renton. Hey, Will.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. A couple questions. I'm a Dolphins fan. First question is Adam Gase safe? And if not, is Stephen Ross going after Jim Harbaugh? I know he said he isn't.
No, he's not.
And then second,
Jim's not coming out this year. He's staying. So that may be 2020. It's not going to be 2019. And that means Adam Gase is going to stay. They're going to fire Mike Tannenbaum, the general manager, promote Chris Greer. I think there'll be some changes on the coaching staff. That they'll stand by Ryan Tannehill because Adam Gase wants Ryan Tannehill as his quarterback. So don't expect a lot of changes, but you know they just can't get out of that 8-8, 7-9 rut.
It's been two decades of that.
Yeah, I know. And they can't even figure out, you know, is their quarterback ever going to be totally healthy?
Right. They keep saying to give him more time, but it's been 7 years of 8-8.
No, that's got to be really frustrating. Hey, by the way, thank you. I've got to run here. We're going to Washington State basketball coming up next. I'll be back on Monday at 10, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.